y'all, this is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Y'allitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
Hey, everybody. A first for us this week on Y'allitics. We are in an old stadium that used to be Baseball Central. I mean, yeah. We have to, you know, at least give a nod to what has happened here in Texas. We've got a team in the World Series. If you're listening from the Houston area or if you love the Astros, I'm sorry, it's not your team this time. Well, it is the Texas Rangers.
There was a World Series played here. We're at the old Globe Life Field.
Globe Life Park.
Globe Life Park.
Which is now called
Choctaw Stadium. It's the one without the roof on it. But there's a World Series played here a few years ago.
2011?
Rangers, Giants.
I think so. So our guest today is Bud Kennedy from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. Bud's a longtime columnist over there. If you don't know this, maybe people do know this because he was just speaking about this. Bud doesn't only cover politics. Bud has an equal-sized audience in food.
Yeah.
It's the Eats, E-A-T-S, beat. Mm-hmm. The Eats beat, which I think is probably better than politics.
Yeah.
Well, it has more readers than politics sometimes, particularly when they're talking about what we're talking about today, probably.
Well, it's kind of the...
Wouldn't you rather talk about barbecue? We could talk about barbecue.
I would.
I think it brings more people together than politics, that's for sure.
Well, that's what people who hate me will still tell me where to find good ribs.
And Bud, I love that you brought, we always have a Texas craft beer here on the podcast. I love that you brought 12 beers for us to sample here, and these are all Fort Worth.
Well, I'm a couple short. We've got 14 constitutional amendments, so you brought a couple too. I mean, we're going to have one.
The podcast won't be that long, but tell us where these are from. These are great beers.
These are from Martin House Brewery in Fort Worth. People know Martin House because they have the pickle beer, and this is the pickle beer right here that is known. If I can get it.
The best made
can.
Pickle,
yeah.
Yeah. Sour
best
pickle.
Made sour that's pickle beer. That's yours.
That's yours.
And then here's a regular Bock. This is one of their serious beers.
Uh-huh. But I didn't know they had serious beers.
Serious beers. They have a lot of novelty beers, but they find this
Toadies Texas Bock.
They have like a Dairyland creamy IPA. They have something that's the flavor of buttered waffles here.
For your breakfast
beer. They have. Here's your
breakfast.
Here's
beer.
Your special. Instead of pumpkin spice, here's your pumpkin stout.
I will try that. I do like a good stout.
Fruits and vegetables and beer, actually, then Wheeler will drink it. If you can get fruit in there.
I'll pull this other one out. This is for Day of the Dead. This is the La Paloma grapefruit and agave.
Oh my God!
I bet it sounds pretty good.
That sounds good to me too, though. Yeah, the grapefruit and agave.
Well, how many are you going to drink for this?
I don't know. I might have to have several. But I would have given you my corporate
strawberry margarita. There's more.
I would have given you my corporate card number and had you bring some of that good barbecue that you know of too, if I had thought about it, because you know where all the places are.
There's plenty between Fort Worth and Arlington. I could bring it right away.
But you skipped over some of the good ones that Martin House. Apple pie beer.
You need
this
that.
Is apple sour with graham crackers, marshmallow, and lactose.
How can you pass it up?
Miss Marmalade, fruity sour ale with lactose and citrus. Strawberry margarita, which my wife makes fun of me for having those.
For drinking strawberry margaritas.
Yeah, but I might have one since we...
y'all are already behind.
What are you having, Bud? Did you want the strawberry margarita?
Yeah, let's see. I think I got another one here. Let's see. Maybe I'll have...
I'll try the serious beer there. I'll try the Bock.
Me gusta agave and guava sour ale. That sounds actually pretty good.
And sounds like it's going to make it pucker.
So, yeah, that ought to do something. So,
where is Martin House, too?
Martin House is just east of downtown off of East 4th. So when you're coming out of Sundance Square, if you go down on 280, if you take the other street that goes straight across 35, it's in the Warehouse District east of downtown off Sylvania.
Hmm.
They have a great a tap room and everything, great place to have events. And
good.
That's where you find a lot of Star-Telegram reporters, more so than in the office.
I can see that.
Yeah. Bud's dishing the secrets. He hasn't had a beer yet here.
Working the beat.
Well, I should have assigned one for each
You should have.
What for each pick? I said this is the appropriate beer.
Because as Bud said, we are going down the list of amendments that are on the November ballot, which you know is also the October ballot, by the way. You can early vote already.
It's underway, yeah.
So get out there and make your voice heard. The reason that we're going down these, though, Bud, is they're always terribly written. Terribly written.
Oh, my
gosh. To the point where you know, you're standing there in the booth and you're going, I'm familiar with this issue, and I'm still not familiar whether I say yes or no to this because there were so many twists and turns in this run-on sentence that I have no idea what exactly I'm supporting or denying here. And then on top of that, these affect every single person in this state. I mean, there's some things on here that really touch a lot of lives. And yet, when we first sat down here, you said we were brave to do an episode on this.
I mean, and people I know want to know. The most important thing is that people will Google, they'll want to go vote, and they'll say, how do I vote on the Texas constitutional amendments? This is something they'll find and watch to find out more about it for straight information. Yeah, but it's not, you know, it's not as much fun as drinking beer. The ballot that you talked about, I looked at the sample ballot, just simply the tax plan constitutional amendment takes up one whole column. It's like,
taxes.
From top to bottom on property taxes, to read that column and digest what that's really supposed to mean. And that's why it's important to have shows that explain what all this really means and what the positives and negatives are before you go vote.
So we're going to get through each of these 14 amendments and maybe 12 beers here. It depends on how long this podcast goes. But you pointed out something great that I never thought about, Bud, and that is Texas has one of the longest constitutions in the United States. And it's about to get longer with these 14 proposed amendments that people are voting on right now.
Yeah, you know, we talked about that. I looked up, Alabama has a longer constitution. Southern states in general tend to legislate by constitutional amendment and have since Reconstruction. But, you know, Texas has 517 amendments, not nearly as simple as the U.S. Constitution.
Right.
So it's about, the Texas Constitution is about a third as long as the Bible. So if you wanted to sit down and read it.
You know what's interesting,
And if we pass these, it goes to 531. So let's activate the scoreboard here at Choctaw Stadium.
Does it go up that high? You know, it's interesting because right now, Texas and California are neck and neck for the most amendments to their constitutions.
Okay.
This puts Texas ahead if these actually go through and they add these to the books, it looks like. So we'll have the longest list of amendments to the Constitution, which is interesting because you always hear about it at the federal level, like, no, you know, you can't change the Constitution. It seems like it just never changes.
We do it all the time.
But statewise, boy, it's every other year.
If El Paso County needs a special district, let's get that on the ballot.
Yeah.
Let's put it in the Constitution.
And you look at this list, and these are all for different reasons. Some of them are really needed. You know, some of them are, like, politically advantageous. And some of them are kind of to make the author look good in the election next March.
Well, there are 14 here. Let's dive into them. I'm sure people are tired of us talking about beer and the politics of it. So there are 14 total amendments on here. The first one, let me get to it here.
This is the agricultural one.
Yeah, this is agriculture. Mm-hmm. Explain what this is, Bud. And you know, I don't want you to give people tips on voting for or against it. But well, what is this?
Well, I'll just say this is probably the most controversial of all the amendments. So we start out with the one where there are hotly debated sides. Prop 1 is called the right to farm, right to ranch, and it basically says that that no government can mess with your right to run your farm and run your ranch, run your own property, but your own operation the way you choose, and that includes the way you handle farm animals, the way you deal with wildlife.
This is going to have a lot of repercussions too, isn't it, in suburban and exurban areas around these big cities, because that was specifically sort of mentioned here that, you know, urban areas are expanding here in Texas and they don't want local governments to be able to say, hey, Mr. Wheeler, you can't have your goats out there and you can't have your rows of crops planted because we're trying to, you know, have a subdivision around
you. You're in the city and you can't have your chicken farm anymore. But it's also, I mean, the people who've raised concerns, and of course, let's talk about who's for it first. Obviously, farmers, ranchers, Farm Bureau, strong lobby in the state, generally for it. It's authored out of Cleburne by Representative Burns from Cleburne in Johnson County. And what it says is that the local authority can't intervene unless there's, quote, an imminent danger, unquote. So even not a long-running hazard if you're dumping waste or something. That's not an imminent danger. So it is really tight. The people who are against it, I notice, are ASPCA, Animal Welfare, people who are worried about the treatment of wildlife, the treatment of farm animals. And there are just people who think it's real redundant that, you know, obviously the legislature has shown no hesitancy in restricting cities from what they can do on a thousand things. The legislature can just pass a bill. Mm-hmm. But in this case, they're trying to look good to the farm vote by saying, we're going to put this in the Constitution.
Mm-hmm. And there's also some people, I guess, in the local control camp who go, you know, here you are tying the hands of local authorities to be able to, you know, determine what is best for their areas.
Well,
you know,
two-thirds of lawmakers said, let's do that. Let's put it on the ballot. Mm-hmm. But it is the most controversial. I'd say 1, 3, and 13 probably have the most controversy, and we'll get to those.
Yeah. Which way is one going to go on Election Day, November 7th?
I mean, it's real tough to imagine that any of these would fail. When people go in, they generally go in kind of because they're told to go in and vote and
to support
just
them.
Troop their way. There are always a few people who are cranky and go in and say, I'm going to vote against everything. Mm-hmm. But mostly the people who don't like them are not going to get up and go vote. Hmm. So with a strong farm vote and the strong rural vote, I would think that that'll pass.
Though we have seen in the past that, you know, some of these do get voted down, even when people were in a yes mood on all of the other ones by big, wide margins. Let's skip to Prop 2 here and talk about this. You know, there's several in here that have to do with ad valorem taxes, property taxes, and this is one of them. This has to do specifically with child care centers being able to exempt more of their property or a huge portion of their property, if not all of it, from the property taxes there for a municipality. How big of a deal is this? But a lot of these centers have struggled a lot during COVID-19 to stay open, and that's sort of the thinking behind this, to sort of give them a break so that people can work and have a place to drop off their kids.
Well, you know, like you said, some people say there's too many tax breaks. This is one of the tax breaks on the ballot, but that they want to just put child care on the same level as public schools of being tax exempt. The CARES Act money is expiring. The child care centers need to balance back. And the rent has gotten so expensive they can't operate some places. But on the other side, when you exempt somebody from taxes, mm-hmm. somebody else always has to pay.
Yeah.
This is Senator Westville from Dallas, a Democrat who put it on the ballot to help inner city child care.
So those who oppose it would say, I'm a homeowner, and at some point that bag is going to be held by me. I'm going to be the one who ends up having to make up the revenue that's lost.
We can't give you and you and you exemptions because then we all pay.
Here's my question on this, though. It sounds good on paper, but is there anything in here that requires daycare centers, child care centers to pass that savings along to parents? Because child care is super expensive, as anyone, you know, who has young kids knows. And if my child daycare center is getting a discount on taxes, do they have to pass that along?
Jason, there is not even anything requiring a landlord to pass it along to a child care center who's a tenant. So the child care center may not even see a dime's break out of this if they're not a landowner, which, you know, the child care centers usually are renters and not landowners. It's not considered good investment to own real estate. So they don't have to pass it down to the child care center. Mm. The child care center doesn't have to pass it on to you.
So whether it has any actual impact if it passes remains to be seen.
Landlords love it.
Yeah, indeed so. Prop 3 is the wealth tax.
This is the one that I would have put my money on to be the most controversial.
Well, you don't want this to pass, Wheeler, because of your wealth,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's just dripping with money.
All right. Tell us. So Representative Cole Hefner from East Texas is behind this. This seems like a lot more political posturing than anything, but
this is, well, the main thing about this is that nobody is trying to tax wealth. Mm-hmm. This is not about taxing income. This is just about levying a tax on how much money you have, how much wealth you have. There have been bills to do it in California, New York, a couple other states. They didn't pass. Nobody in Texas, even the most liberal members of the legislature, have never even, you know, filed a bill proposing this. But this is something that the legislature says, we need to stamp this out right now. You know,
why, though? What's the point of it? So they can run on it or what?
They can say, you know, we protected your wealth. We prevented Texas from having a wealth tax forevermore. So we can't be like California and New York, though. We can't be a liberal woke state that has a wealth tax.
I wonder, though, how this sits with, you know, regular everyday people, though, too. You know, sometimes those proposals to tax the rich do sit well with regular everyday people. And how will they feel about, you know, making sure that the wealthy don't face an additional tax?
Well, I think it's worded in such a veiled way that won't really come across that people have that option. But the main arguments are just Texas would never do this. We don't need this amendment. It's a waste of time. It's a vanity bill for political purposes.
And it doesn't even prevent a wealth tax. It basically just makes it so that the legislature has to come to voters again down the road if they want to create a wealth tax.
Right, and which won't happen.
Prop 4 is the big kahuna on here.
Yes.
And this is the one about property taxes. So we saw the legislature fight over this for a while. They finally decided to use a big chunk of the surplus to lower our property taxes. I got my property tax appraisal, and it's lowered by a big chunk. I was surprised by that. Mm-hmm. But here's my question on this. In order for this to, the legislature said, okay, we'll pass this, but voters, you have to approve it so we can lock it into the Constitution. Right. I have a couple of questions on this. I can't imagine people voting against it.
Bud wants a different beer, I think.
Yeah, I'm trying to get what you want,
buddy. Or did you already finish the first one?
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay.
I didn't. I'm just going to try the...
He's sampling.
I'm going to try the hazy IPA.
It's
here.
A flight
the,
now.
The sour beer is a little sour.
Yeah, so you're puckering.
I'm not as sour about this amendment.
Who is sour about this? But there are people who are sour about it. Here's my first question. What happens if this does not pass then? By chance, if this
I can't imagine this not passing, but this is what everything was built on and argued out in the last session, the negotiations, the House hammered it in. You know, homeowners increased the exemption to $100,000, you know, on a home that's worth $300,000, which, you know, is middle of the road these days. Mm-hmm. You save $1,500 a year. Mm-hmm. And also there's a temporary appraisal cap for business, so there's something for business and for homeowners. Mm-hmm. You know, the question is who's against it. I guess it's just people who are worried about exemptions and worried about, giving the – I mean, maybe somebody who's resentful and says, well, why should the little people get such an exemption, but – my house is worth a lot more. I didn't get an exemption.
That sounds like
Wheeler. Or perhaps, you know, renters out there might not be happy.
Renters,
because,
terrible, yeah.
As you said, you know, a lot of times this doesn't trickle down from a landlord, you know, to cheapen your rent. And so you don't really, you know, get a benefit out of this. And we know that there are a lot of renters in this state. And so that is sort of a wild card in this as well. You know, one of the things that I've heard from some people, too, is they feel like they're worried that school districts are getting stiffed here. So the way that this actually works, though, is the state had a huge surplus this time around, and they said, what we're doing is we're essentially buying down your school property taxes. So you're gonna net a big savings on your school property taxes, and we're going to send that money that you would have sent directly to the school districts. So they're not gonna suffer out of this either. The question is, Bud, you know, how do you keep that going into perpetuity, you know, session after session after session? You're not always going to have a record surplus to play with.
Well, this doesn't fix any of the school funding problems. It just kind of dumps some more money in them for a little while. And I think everybody knows that. But this, you know, and the question is, well, how much of this money even will wind up going to the schools? We're not sure that a lot of it will wind up. I think it's strictly about, you know, cutting people's taxes, fulfilling the promises by the lieutenant governor primarily of, you know, saving people on their property taxes. And then on the other side, the promises by the speaker of saving businesses too and getting businesses on the safe.
Well, they knew they had to do something because Texas has some of the highest property taxes in the country.
Yeah, some of the highest indeed. So if I support this, Bud, and I'm a homeowner and I want to lower my property taxes and confirm everything that the legislature did, how should I vote on this? For it?
I should vote for it. Well, I think, and I have not reviewed the exact language. I think there's some very good language in here about the over 65 exemptions that makes them more automatic, and that you don't have to, they're not as complicated and they carry over. I think there's some very good language helping senior citizens like me with their property.
Maybe a smart move there, too, because we know who votes reliably, especially in these off-year elections.
More than 50% of the vote.
You know, and I did, I've been doing some work on this for some, you know, a money franchise that I do.
Shameless plug, go ahead.
Yeah,
go
it's
ahead.
Called Right on the Money. Yeah.
Where can we get this? Where can we watch this?
Yeah, right on, WFAA.com/Right on the Money. Or just follow me at Jason Wheeler TV on Facebook, Twitter, or Thread.
We'll be back in just a moment.
So you know, we've been following this, and the math, you know, we were trying to do the math on this, and there were so few details with the math on how this works out for seniors and disabled people who, you know, have the ceiling on their properties. And none of the math added up. You know, we just kept doing it and doing it and doing it. I was consulting with someone at a central appraisal district. I was consulting with a lawmaker's office. Nobody could figure this out. And finally, they, you know, started speaking back and forth between Senator Betancourt's office, who is the author of this tax legislation,
okay,
and the lieutenant governor's office. And
here,
they
here
said,
comes the question, bud. Stand by.
And they said, this actually works out to where a lot of seniors are going to notice that their school taxes go to near zero or zero. And we were just like, really? Okay, send me the formula on that. How are you getting to that? And they sent the formula over, and sure enough, it looks like it can do that. And I checked with just one county has emailed me back so far, Dallas County, and they said that they are preliminarily here seeing a huge jump in the number of people who are going to zero in their school district taxes, a huge jump in seniors and disabled people who are seeing that.
And like so, you said earlier, that means that the rest of us are going to have to make that up at some point.
There is that
where is that money going to come
from?
This
is every time you give the senior citizens a break, you know, it's the younger people who have to pay it.
You're welcome, bud. You're welcome. hey, on
wait,
this.
One more thing on that.
Go ahead. I'm still on Prop 4 as well. No, I'm not going to. This is the big one here. So the University of Houston did a poll on this earlier this month, and they found that 56% of likely voters intend to vote for this. 61% of homeowners will vote for Proposition 4. 47% of renters will vote for Proposition 4. I was surprised that only 56% of likely voters are going to vote for this.
I don't know whether they
61% of homeowners.
I don't know whether they use the proposal, but that proposal is so mind-boggling when you see it.
The language in this.
The language, the column deep language. It's you would look at it and say, I don't know what this is, but I probably ought to vote against it.
Let me ask a question. I was going to save for later. You brought it up earlier, though. Who in the hell writes these things?
Oh my gosh!
I mean, why can't they have someone write this?
Have a normal person write these.
And there are states where they have the amendments have to be written in plain language.
But who writes
but
these?
In
though?
Texas,
the lawmakers
these are
or
the
staffers?
Lawmakers who write them, and then it gets more complicated when the legislative council goes. You know, it just, you know, goes through their work and helps with the, and then you get everybody to check and say, well, we got to put this in, got to put this in, got to put this in, and it just gets more convoluted. And obviously, the amendments are not written. You know, when you have a school bond election, you know, the law says everything has to be presented in a neutral way. You can't present it in a way that sounds like you're for it or want it passed. Amendments can be presented any way the legislature wants them to be presented. So they're presented in a way that makes everything sound beautiful and glittery and glowing so that you'll vote for
it. But you get to that word count and it just gets, you know, you start getting lost in the words. You know, it's funny. Yeah. Did you know that they have these scales that determine the readability of something? There's a couple of different scales.
Really?
And it's funny, like if you look on Ballotpedia, they list these different amendments and they give the scores on these scales for these different constitutional amendments. And Texas is certainly not alone in this. Other states are, you know, kind of bad at this too. But the readability scores that some of these amendments this time are getting are just terrible. Oh. I mean, you know, if 100 is like really readable, you know, maybe they're getting like a 6. I mean, it's that bad. Or, you know, the grade level that you would have to achieve to know it would, you know, is like a 20, you know. So there's that. The last time we saw one of these amendments, I think it was in 2019, dealing with lowering property taxes, that one passed, I think it was 85% of people. So that is interesting that that poll shows, you know, support in the 50s. But I'll say this, this time lawmakers did make sure they reached out and they told these taxing authorities, hey, go ahead and send those tax bills. We want those tax bills out. We want them out by election day, if possible. And we want you to write on there, here's how much you saved because of our property tax cuts. And you know, essentially, you have this in your mind as you go in to vote on November 7th or in early voting.
Does it have a big picture of Paul Betancourt on it? Or it
you know, so the thing is if this doesn't pass, they say, you know, what do you do then? Because now you've sent me this bill that has this savings. You're going to get a follow-up bill at the end of the year for what you would have saved if voters had passed.
But like Jason, you asked who writes these, and this is the worry is, if you think these are bad, you should look at the laws they pass.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's passed by the same people who write the laws.
We're only, what, a third of the way through this, or a quarter of the way through this.
We're half out of beer already. So.
let me ask you this. The way to go to vote on these 14 propositions, or any time you have these, is to take a little cheat sheet with you, and you can totally do that, where you study this ahead of time. You don't study
on paper,
study
not on your phone, right, not on anything electronic.
Yeah, that's a big thing now.
And
yeah.
people pass, candidates and different organizations pass out little
cards.
Little cards on how to vote. But that's probably the best way to do this, is research this ahead of time. Don't roll into the voting booth and try to decipher this language.
Just think about how slow the voting is. If people are standing there reading every proposition, this is the longest ballot you ever vote on and the slowest ballot. People will take 5, 6, 7 minutes to cast votes. And so go and vote early when there's nobody voting. There won't be a heavy turnout. Try to go ahead and vote on the days when nobody else is voting and take your time.
I was going to say the good news here is also the bad news, and that is with these constitutional amendment elections. Again, so many of these touch your everyday life. They can save you a lot of money. They can spend a lot of your money. They can affect your rights or your neighbor's rights. The last time around, I think it was about 1.5 million people showed up out of more than 16 million who were registered in Texas. Yeah. The time before that, we had about 2 million out of more than 15 million. So, we're talking about a tiny sliver of the electorate that's making big decisions for you and me and everybody else.
To lock it in. Let's get to Prop 5 here. This is Representative Greg Bonin from Friendswood down the Houston area. He wants to give other universities money for research besides Texas A&M Network and UT.
A&M and UT have always been able to tap into the Permanent University Fund. It starts with Permian Basin oil wealth, a lot of Texas oil wealth. It's been this great investment fund that has really been the springboard for those two systems to grow. But, Texas has 7, 8 different university systems. Some of the others didn't have the same kind of endowment or investment money to fall back on. This started as a bill to have a investment fund, an endowment fund for the University of Houston.
Go Cougs.
And Texas Tech. Yeah, for the Cougs and for Tech. During the process, two other universities were added, the University of North Texas and Texas State in San Marcos. So this creates a large endowment fund. It doesn't put Tech, UNT and Texas State on the same level as A&M and UT, but it gives them a better kickstart in order to be able to grow the universities, grow their systems, promote research, and build a stronger university system.
Bonin is a Republican from the Houston area who wrote this essentially, but this is more popular among Democrats.
This is more popular among education supporters and everybody who, the stuff I've seen promoting this has come from the higher education community. Of course, you look at UNT in Dallas-Fort Worth as, a huge medical school in Fort Worth that I love, law school in Dallas. And so these universities all have a big footprint in their communities. Texas Tech goes all over West Texas and is an influence, as close as Fort Worth. Texas State is growing, and University of Houston, hugely important downtown.
It sure is. I'm a graduate of the University of Houston, and there is some amazing research that's coming out of some of these universities, but they it's not going to totally level that playing field with UT and A&M, but it's at least going to bring up a lot of these other universities here in the state if this passes. As far as just the money game goes, now the question is, do people want to support that? Do they want to do that set aside? That's for each person to decide individually.
The Cougs made the first down too, I'll just say. That was a bad call.
That was a really sketchy call.
That was a BCS call.
I love UT though too, so I'm kind of split on that one, but boy, yeah. that was a really nasty one. Let's head to Proposition 6 here, because this one definitely deals with something that affects all of us. It's water, and trying to get more of it, especially as Texas keeps on growing and more people keep moving here, bud.
Well, this is a proposal for $1 billion. Here we are again spending money from the excess in the rainy day fund. Mm-hmm. So we've got all this extra money, all this extra wealth. So this is $1 billion for a statewide water plan. And the only thing that's raised any concern in this plan is that about a quarter of it includes projects that involve desalinization.
Yeah.
And actually taking water out of the sea, water out of Sabine Lake, some of the salt water, and trying to make it drinkable. The communities really need this particularly in South Texas. San Antonio has talked about piping in Gulf water, but you get south of San Antonio, get like between Corpus, and you get all that territory from Corpus across Laredo down to the valley. Mm-hmm. It's really dry. They don't have water. Corpus, in order for that economy to grow, they need help with the storms. They don't have the business they used to have for Corpus to thrive, for business in South Texas to thrive. They need water, so they need to bring water out of the sea. And there are people who say, you know, if the sea's rising, then let's take water out of it. Mm. But the environmentalists are a little concerned about the impact on coastal wildlife if you start running desalinization projects. Those are the only people who are really worried, and they're not really against it because they're in favor of all the rest of the money going to the water fund.
Well, let's talk about the water fund. We've done podcasts on this in the past, and as Jason mentioned, as North Texas grows, as Southeast Texas, the Houston area grows, and Central Texas as well, we need more water. And there have been forecasts, I think, from the comptroller's office that say that North Texas has, 30 or 40 years left before we're going to be in a critical situation. How much of this money, this billion-dollar kickstart, would lead to that, Bud? Am I asking you stuff you don't know?
I think every bit. I looked at the plan, and it looked like every bit of it. They were very vague about any specifics. They did not say this lake, that lake, this dam, because nobody... Once they start giving specifics, people are going to say, not in my backyard.
Right. Don't tear down my family farm and flood
exactly,
my fields.
Yeah, which you have to, lakes, you have to have lakes just like you have to have airports.
So create the fund now, and then we'll make the tough decisions after.
And have the Water Development Board make the tough decisions. But all of it is going to the real hardcore needs of water, both North Texas, South Texas, everything west, the parts of Texas that don't have reliable. Dallas and Fort Worth, we're going to run short on water, and we have some of the most reliable water supplies in the state. Everybody else is kind of behind us. San Antonio is way behind.
I was going to say, even if you get the money right now, you're already behind.
Right. I mean, we pipe all our water in from Palestine, Corsicana, and a pipeline from Sabine is next for us.
I think Proposition 7 here is also a controversial one, because this, of course, anytime you say the word electricity here in Texas, it's controversial now, especially after what happened in that winter storm in 2021. And this is basically a set aside here to support, you know, construction, maintenance, modernization, operation of electric generating facilities. This is essentially setting aside a big chunk of money to help get more gas-powered plants up and running here in Texas. The question is, does it work, though, Bud? We've heard from people in the industry who say nobody's going to build another gas plant.
Well, we talked over and over about the need for Texas to incentivize building more plants beyond what the business supports, beyond what regular, profit, businesses that they need to build plants that don't make a profit, just so we have them when we really need them. And that's what this does. It leads power providers to build that. The big complaints, and, one of the newspapers in the state, the Statesman editorialized against it, the big complaint is that it doesn't put any money into solar and wind. It's solely devoted to energy, the traditional energy sources, and nothing for anybody else. But it does put in money to try to keep us from freezing when all the gas plants freeze.
But this is $7 billion in hopes that companies will come in and say, hey, okay, we'll take this loan and we'll build a plant that we don't necessarily need to make a profit on every day. Like Jason said, though, maybe they exist, but I don't know of any of these power companies who say, we're going to take that money.
Yeah, nobody wants to build something that's not profitable in the free market. I mean, power companies are working on a free market basis. So this is, the lieutenant governor and the sponsors of this bill are going to have to prove that there's a way to make this work and to get us some more power plants.
So
this is something that came from the Senate, idea that came from the Senate to raise this money. This was actually opposed in the House, and this was pushed hard by the Senate to sink all this money into just laying out basically a big pot of money for energy companies to dip into.
And even if this passes, Bud, there's no guarantee that it will actually be used then, right?
There's no guarantee it'll be used. Definitely no guarantee that we won't freeze again.
Yeah, it's maybe it's cynical, but I was talking with the energy fellow there at the University of Houston, another plug there for the alma mater, Ed Herz, and he was basically saying, why would I be incentivized to build another gas plant if I have plants now that are producing electricity, and I know that the scarcity that's in this market is continuing, And we just went through the summer where we got to these real scarce days where they're asking people to cut back. Well, what happens in those scarcity moments is the power of electricity shoots through the roof. And now I'm making tons of money with the plants I already have. Why would I go build more plants and take away that scarcity and make less money?
That's right. Yeah.
And then have to pay for that plant.
Yeah. It's all for profit. And then they don't put any money into wind or solar or other sources.
Hmm. It's hard to believe we're only halfway through this at 34 minutes into the podcast.
Speed round now
for
the second
half.
Here
we go,
half.
Bud. We're going to fly through the,
well, we can
the
do
next
that.
Seven.
Yeah.
Prop 8 is broadband, and this is making sure everyone across the state, kids, elderly, rich,
rural,
poor, everyone
comes
else.
Comes out of East Texas, and
yeah.
This is the two you mentioned are exactly what we need. Kids, when we were all at home in COVID,
yeah.
Kids in a lot of Texas couldn't have homeschool lessons or home lessons because there was no broadband. I talked to a counselor in I think it was Coleman, who said that she saw these families every day that were just distraught because they had to put their kids in a car and drive 45 miles in the morning to the McDonald's in Brownwood
yeah.
to sit there and watch school and have them sit there in the parking lot
right.
all day and drive them back home. So this brings broadband to parts of the country where the free parts of the state where the free market hasn't brought it.
A lot of voters in that UH poll say that they will support this. So that looks like that it will sail to victory with a sizable majority there.
And this very much dovetails off the federal legislation.
CARES Act?
Yeah. It was the Broadband Equity Access and Deployment Program that was passed by the feds. And basically, this is trying to set up a fund so that you can offer as a state matching funds and get those federal dollars here to build out broadband. It's just kind of dovetailing off of that.
No takers for the apple pie beer, guys.
Not yet. That's
we're only
dessert.
Halfway through, bud. We're only
That's
halfway
later.
Through.
Let's do Prop 9.
Our producer says save it for him. Yeah. Daryl Golden wants that one.
It's been called for.
He's got dibs. Prop 9.
So Prop 9, this one deals with the teacher retirement system of Texas. You know, a lot of these teachers who have retired, bud, they haven't seen raises. They've been, getting pension checks, but they haven't seen raises in almost 20 years. And think of what the cost of living and inflation has done in that period. Basically, what this does is it sets aside some money from the general revenue fund so that they can give them raises after all this time.
They get from a 2% raise to a 6% raise, which is not nearly enough to cover inflation, but it helps a little bit. And I don't know about you, but every retired teacher that I see or know has been, sending Facebook messages or emailing or they say, please, please, please go vote for Prop 9, probably more than any other prop on the ballot.
Yeah, we hear from a lot of retired teachers who have been asking for this session after session after session. So, that's going to have a lot of support, bipartisan support, I would think.
Everybody.
From both sides. Prop 10, tell us about this. This is a medical equipment exemption from Joan Huffman down in Houston. What is this?
I think this is another Houston proposal. Basically exempts medical equipment from property taxes, that if you're warehousing, storing your medical equipment, then you don't get taxed on it like you would for other business property tax. The idea in Houston is to stimulate funding and innovation in the medical center. The medical center would like to have bring more businesses to Houston and have this property tax break to say, look, if you bring your med equipment company here, then you won't pay property tax on it. It came out of Houston. The complaint against it is that if you start giving this exemption, the specific figure here, and this is on the legislative analysis, it leaves a $43 million hole in school funding next year that has to be made up somewhere. In 3 years, that grows to $60 million. Mm. And I'm not saying schools would lose that. The legislature would just have to find that somewhere else.
Mm. So
one newspaper editorial board said, what's really in it for the rest of us?
Which editorial board was that, bud?
That was the Fort Worth Star-Telegram.
Shameless plug here, bud. So Prop 10 is Houston. Prop 11 is El Paso.
That El Paso one you were talking about.
Yeah, it's pretty tightly focused El Paso.
El Paso is not included in the bill that allows counties to set up conservation districts and all kinds of other special districts.
El Paso gets left out a lot in Texas. A lot of people forget about that little, part that overhangs out there. They're in another time zone. They're in the mountain time zone.
Right.
They sort of get cut off like that.
I like El Paso, though.
So this is sort of bringing that in.
So it's like, we forgot about them. We're going to let them in, too. So it's another one of those very narrowly crafted bills for one specific location, and so is the next proposition.
Which segues nicely into Proposition 12. This is very specific. It only has to do with Galveston County, and it's getting rid of the office of county treasurer there. What's going on there,
bud? Do you still have a... Well, you don't need a county treasurer.
No,
nobody
cares. I don't think
yeah, this
one.
Is a constitutional office, so what counties do is they go and get an amendment passed to say, hey, we want to ditch our county treasurer. And what Tarrant County got rid of theirs 30 years ago, the county auditor, who's appointed by the district judges, who's really more protected from political influence. The county auditor does the things the treasurer used to do, overlooking the money. It works pretty well. It's just not an elective office anymore. Galveston wanted to take it away. There's been a political battle there. A guy ran against the treasurer saying he wanted to do away with the office. The treasurer argued we got to keep it. The guy wants to do away with it.
He won. He wants to get away with the position
he has. To do away with it. It happened in Tarrant County, too. And Galveston County says they estimate they'll save $500,000 just by not operating this office. The expense of not just his salary, but the staff, the equipment, funding, everything, by not having this elected office.
I guess on the flip side there in Galveston County and in other places that have, grappled with this is that critics say, well, the person who oversees the money should be independent from the commissioner's court and the county judge, and it should be somebody who's elected and accountable to the voters.
Right.
So you've got that voice out there as well. But again, the county saying, hey, we could save a lot of money by just getting rid of this.
And you take control away from the people. And then, of course, the other people who are worried about this are other lower offices on the ballot, your constables and so forth, who say, if you start taking away some offices.
The slippery slope.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Are they going to start taking us away too?
So Prop 13 is one that I think a lot of people would be interested in going into the 2024 election. This is about the age of judges in this state.
And this seems to be narrowly crafted for a purpose too.
For one judge?
For one judge. This, you can serve... past 75, I guess, with this, and so happens that Chief Justice Nathan Hecht is 74, and so I think people want him to stay in office. This allows judges to serve 5 years longer than they do now. But you, on the other hand, you look around, we have presidential candidates who are 80 and 77. We have the Senate leader who's 81, Mitch McConnell, I mean. And so we have all. How do we like that? How's that working out?
There's been a lot of moaning about that.
There's a lot of complaints, but at the judge, when you get to the bench, do you want your judge to be 77, 78?
Right.
A lot of judges do a great job. If this doesn't pass, they'll continue to work as retired judges where they don't have to run for re-election. But this is meant to keep judges on the bench and let them keep running if they're doing a good job and let the people decide.
Let's get to Prop 14 here now, and this has to do with parks, state parks in particular, Bud. This would set aside a fair amount of money to what they call create sort of this golden age, a new golden age for state parks. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, this is another, spending the rainy day fund. Not Robin Hood money, spending rainy day money. We have an extra $1 billion for parks we're going to throw around. And this really came into focus with all the Fairfield Lake debacle and all the debacle and all the need for suddenly. We didn't know that was just a rented park down there. We thought we were going to
remind our listeners what that
Fairfield
is.
Lake was a power plant in central Texas that the property around the lake was deeded, was leased to the state to use as a state park for years, and all of a sudden...
And it became very popular.
Became really popular.
Especially with people who fish.
People who fish, because it's great fishing country. And it's very politically popular, because it's in the middle between Houston and DFW.
Yeah.
So it was a really good park to go, not far off the interstate, and convenient for anything you wanted to do. Is some place where people could go conveniently from everywhere. But then the power plant was sold, and the new owners said, we're booting the state out, and it's just like everything that happens, you're always, if you're a renter, you're always at the mercy of your landlord. And so the people, rose up and were upset, said, how do we let this happen?
Right.
And the state said, well, we're going to create this $1 billion fund to expand state parks. Generally, we know that with Texas' immense growth, we're obviously supposed to become the number one largest state in America. There's new figures that say that Dallas-Fort Worth will become the largest metro in America by the end of the century. and that Houston and Austin will be second and third.
And you got to have that park space.
You got to have something green.
Yeah.
And, you know, in Fort Worth, this is a different topic, but Mayor Parker is ordered hundreds of thousands of dollars devoted to a fund to buy up new park space and have new park space in the city.
Yeah,
she,
you know,
she everybody ran on that, I think, didn't she?
She ran on that, and yeah. Now she's, you know, getting, that's all, I mean, you consider how expensive land is.
Yeah.
I don't know how much parkland they're going to be able to get, even for $1 billion.
That's what I was thinking.
You know, how much can you get? You can't get a Four Sixes Ranch. What can you get?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. You think all these are going to pass, Bud?
I think all these are going to pass. I mean, the people have to be really mad and mad enough to, you know, fumble around and find their registration card and figure right. out where to go vote. They have to be really mad to vote against.
And there's really not any organized opposition against any of these.
No, I have not seen any mailers, ads, action committees, anything opposing.
Here's one thing we can promise, that the ballot you see on early voting or on November the 7th is not going to be as long as this podcast.
Oh, my gosh.
We can promise you that.
It might take you as long to get through it, though, if you don't go in there with your little cheat sheet. Again, don't use your phone or electronic device to do it, though. You might set off a few people.
And don't bring beer either.
Don't bring a
beer.
We
have plenty you could take, plenty of leftover here.
Yeah,
we were still on his first.
Have it. So early voting is underway right now. I think it goes through November 3rd. So October 23rd yep. to November 3rd. Election day itself is on November 7th. And who knows, you know, maybe we don't have as embarrassing of a showing as we usually have for these constitutional amendment elections because the numbers are pretty abysmal looking out over history.
The reason to go vote, even if you're not sure about these amendments, the reason to go vote is just learn how, make sure you can. Make sure you're still registered. Make sure you're on the list. Go vote now and consider it a dry run for Super Tuesday in March. Learn where to vote, how to vote. Make sure you can vote, and then get ready for the big kahuna in March.
Yeah, Super Tuesday is, of course, the primary election for Republicans and Democrats going into the 2024 election.
When everything is decided in the state of Texas.
And that is indeed the case. But good insight, good information as always. We always appreciate the background on a lot of these things that we always don't have time to research.
Thank you for getting me back out to Choctaw again.
Thanks for the beer.
Yeah, thanks for the smarts today. Thanks for the Super Smash Pumpkin Stout.
How was that?
It was interesting. I like a good stout every now and then. And you know, next time, though, Bud, we're going to have to do some brisket.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I could bring some Angelo's ribs, too.
Well, let's go to Angelo's. How about that?
This guy just knows.
We could get the whole back room at Angelo's. And, you know, at Angelo's, they have a large mug and a small mug of beer when you're ordering your barbecue. And the cashier will turn to the bartender and holler whether you want one large or one small.
Nothing against Choctaw Stadium, but we're in the wrong place for this. I'm in my 60s.
I have never heard anyone order one small. Everyone orders
Wheeler
one
hasn't
large.
Been there yet, though, so give him an opportunity.
So, Bud, as we go out here, where can people find you to follow you for politics and
food? Thanks. Yeah, it's startelegram.com/Bud. We'll get you the recent columns on political goings-on.
You have your own landing page.
Dedicated
awesome.
URL,
you,
and then startelegram.com/eatsbeat. We'll get you all the news on what's opening and what's new and where to go next on the dining scene. So,
but you have a huge social media following, too. Tell us about both of those.
You can follow on Facebook. There's a Facebook dining guy and then a Facebook Bud Ken for politics and food. And then there's dual accounts for Bud Kennedy on X or Eat Speed on X, and you can find me there. Bud Kennedy on Instagram is a food page, too.
You're ahead of me. Yeah. I still have trouble calling it X.
He dominates, though, but on Instagram, on X, on Facebook, you're all over the place, Bud. You're putting us to shame.
But it's always a pleasure.
Thanks, guys.
Click subscribe and get Y'all-itics every week. Y'all-itics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.